Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Welcome to the latest Oxford Institute for Energy Studies podcast. My name is David Ledesma, and I'm chairman of the Natural Gas Programme at the Institute. It's my great pleasure to be joined today by Mike Forward, Senior Research Fellow at the Institute, to discuss the key messages from his contribution to the OIES Quarterly Review, Recovery from COVID-19, the Balancing the LNG Market, that was published in January by the Institute. Now, just to date stamp this podcast in the ever-changing world, we're recording this on the 1st of February, when JKM was 8.75 and NBP 7.20. Mike, great to have you here.
Oh, thank you very much, David. Happy New Year to you and all our listeners.
Absolutely. Well, look, Mike, now could we start this podcast by looking back at 2020, a period that certainly experienced considerable challenges from the COVID-19 pandemic. So what happened to gas demand globally and in Europe in 2020?
Yes, thank you, David. I think as we kind of went into lockdown and the sort of pandemic hit or hit before, at the Institute, we did our sort of first quarterly gas review of 2020, looked at the impact of COVID-19, what's happened on the gas market, both sort of a very short term but medium term as well. We were looking really at a fall of about 3 to 5% in global gas demand, depending on which analysis you looked at. We were sort of the slightly more optimistic end of the range, saying about 3% fall. The IEA, for example, came out about the same time, we're closer to 5%. I think what's happened really, demand has generally been quite a bit more robust than those numbers, especially in power generation. And in some of the Asian markets, obviously notably China, whereas kind of a blip and gas demand carried on growing. It now seems the decline may only be, our estimate is 1 to 1.5%. And the IEA recently published their first quarterly gas market report this year of 2 to 2.5%. So maybe sort of around about 1.5 to 2% fall kind of looks to be the what might have happened. In Europe, particularly, the anticipated sort of 6 to 7% decline now looks as it may only have been about 3 to 4%, with Q3 and Q4 making up in part for the very, very weak Q2. Again, here I think it's been the switching of coal to gas in power has played a big part in limiting the fall in demand.
Yeah, exactly. And it is always that kind of battle, isn't it, between the different energy sources. So how do we see the prospects for gas demand in 2021, as we kind of increasingly recover from COVID-19? So let's start by the growth area of Asia.
Yes, I mean, I think as you might expect, I think Asia is likely to be the main driver of gas demand growth, especially again China. It's kind of the fifth year of their last five-year plan, so they like to try and meet their targets. The traditional importers, like, say, Japan, Korea, Taiwan, may be flat with a small rise, although it's always been very, very cold in January there. And from a demand perspective, the year's got off to a good start, not great for the prices. The only downside in Asia, I think, is if the higher prices persist, which could price gas out of some markets, especially the India market, which is very price-sensitive.
Yeah, and we've been discussing at the Institute, haven't we, about how India is actually going to respond in 2021. It's a huge uncertainty, isn't it, there?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, they seem to like gas prices $5 or below and hate them $5 or above. So it'll be interesting to see how that sort of pans out.
Yeah, it is going to be interesting. Well, look, what about Europe then? What does 2021 look like there?
We're probably looking at a small rebound now. Back in April, we thought the rebound would be quite big. But that was only because it'd fallen so much. So we've not really changed our 2021 view that much. It's just as it's fallen less, then it might rise back less. So it's not quite getting back to 2019 levels. But again, there's some downside risk here that if high prices persist, which makes gas less competitive against coal, and that could depress demand a little bit.
Yeah, it's that coal gas again, isn't it? And what about the rest of the world then? Any key areas we should be highlighting?
Well, in the US, actually, demand doesn't appear to decline that much at all in 2020. There's gas went up in the power generation sector. Coal was decimated. But looking ahead to the Henry Hub curve against the Central Appalachian, the climate's coal, gas looks less competitive against coal in the power market. be rather paradoxical if coal made a rebound in gas demand in the first year of Biden's presidency after continuing to decline during the Trump presidency. The Russia demand should rebound as well. That was down quite a bit. And the Middle East, I think, after a slight pause in 2020, will return to growth. I mean, overall, at the global level, I think we're looking at something like a 2.5-3% rise in 2021, which is lower than expected back in April. But again, only because 2020 has declined much less than previously anticipated.
Yeah, but of course, there's a huge uncertainty, isn't there, about whole recovery from the pandemic? And none of us know about that.
No, I think it's, the lockdowns actually, I think, kind of almost benefit gas demand in the winter. Because we're all at home with the heating on and boiling kettles, as I've been doing this morning.
Well, look, we've talked about demand then. Let's kind of move our discussion to supply. In 2020, it was certainly a supply side balancing that was an important factor in kind of getting the market to balance. How did Europe balance its LNG versus pipeline gas then in 2020?
Yeah, just very briefly on this. I think, the base of the market balanced at very low prices, first of all by shutting LNG. We maybe lost 150 to 200 cargoes in the summer, which is about, broadly speaking, 15 to 20 BCM, which is the surplus gas. And in Europe, we had a sharp reduction in pipeline imports, especially from Russia. And we also filled storage again. So the market balanced through those sort of three factors.
Well, look, sticking to LNG for a minute, then, how did 2020 look overall, therefore? And is supply still increasing as we kind of enter 2021? Can we expect a significant rise in LNG trade during the year, do you think?
Yeah, it's a slightly longer piece of analysis here, I think. I mean, LNG trade was actually up by a small amount in 2020, notwithstanding the shutting of cargoes. On the import side, volumes into Europe were down marginally from the 2019 high levels, but that really all happened in December when cargoes dropped off quite a lot. There's a big drop in imports into the Americas, especially Mexico, although Brazil was up a little bit in the last few months. This was more than offset by strong growth in China, plus India and Bangladesh. Some growth in the other Asian markets, but the rest of the world was sort of pretty flat. So a small rise in 2020. On the supply side, notwithstanding all the shut-ins in the US, the US actually saw a big rise in exports as a lot of new plants came on. There was a small increase in Australia and Middle East, with declines in Europe as the Hammerfest plant shut down because of the fire, and declines in Central South America, Malaysia, Egypt, and Algeria. 2021, supply is still increasing as some of the US plants ramp up to full volumes, probably by another sort of 2.5-3%. Plus, there's all the available supply that was shut in 2020 to come back, which suggests maybe a significant rise in LNG trade. But again, obviously, you come back to the old favourite demand. The Asian markets, again, led by China, could maybe increase imports by over 20 BCM, maybe up to 25 BCM, which is more than the global rise in imports in 2020. The rest of the world, let's ignore Europe for a minute, is probably flattish, I think. So if LNG volumes into Europe remain at 2020 levels, then the global rise in LNG imports could be some 25 BCM or a rise of 5%. However, LNG imports into Europe will be under pressure from a partial rebound in pipeline imports and maybe larger withdrawals from, which we're seeing, or fewer injections into storage. At the start of 2021, before we saw the big price spikes in Asia, we suggest that LNG imports into Europe could fall actually by maybe precise 13 BCM, which would limit the global rise in LNG imports to around 10 BCM, a rise of only 2%. And we may come back to this, but with LNG export capacity continuing to rise, this suggests another summer of LNG cargoes being shut in, although not to anywhere near the great extent we had last year.
Yeah, because I think Platts recorded 177 cargoes being shut in. And, of course, you mustn't forget, for every one of those, someone is paying for the liquefaction fee. So there is a commercial incentive to lift them if they can, of course, as we all know. But one of the interesting things, of course, about the last quarter of last year was how much LNG was actually being diverted from Europe to Asia. And I'm just wondering, How did Europe actually satisfy its own demand? What was it, pipeline gas, or did it switch to another energy source? What was it, Mike?
Demand, as best we can tell, we don't have the final figures, was back to, in inverted commas, normal-ish levels, if there is anything such as normal in Q4. I mean, it wasn't a cold Q4, but they were back pretty much to the 2019 levels. Normal service being resumed. But with the LNG being diverted to Asia, and partly imports from Russia increased, sort of back again to normal Q4 levels or similar to 2019. And Algeria saw quite a big rebound, remarkable rebound in Q4, as it sent more through pipeline, less through LNG. So that was, in fact, overall, Algeria looks to have exported as much in 2020 or in 2019, which is kind of quite surprising given the weak performance earlier in the year. Plus, we saw really big withdrawals from storage than in 2019. So there was a big turnaround in that area. Such the fact that overall in 2020, there's more gas injected, more gas withdrawn from storage than was injected in, which is a complete reversal of the 2019 impact.
It's interesting. Just one side issue, of course, of diverting cargoes away from Europe is the kind of the chestnut of security of supply. So I just wondered, do you think the ever-present threat of LNG cargoes being pulled to Asia by price challenges, questions LNG as a secure gas supply source for Europe? What's your view on that?
Short answer is no. Europe has a significant diversity of supply in pipeline, LNG and own production, as a vast storage infrastructure. And combined with very, very liquid trading markets, especially in Northwest Europe, the response of price will always ensure that volume is available at the right price or at a price. However, there's it may be the interest of some people in positions of power and authority to interpret this as a threat to security supply and use this for their own objectives. So we could end up with an active policy not really needed. So I don't think there really is a threat to the volume security of supply to Europe.
Even though, of course, political rhetoric from some may kind of use that as a kind of some tool for their arguments.
Yeah, somebody once said you should never waste a good crisis.
We've got a few of those around at the moment, Mike. Come on. Well, look, Europe, has, as we've been saying, generally been the balancing market for LNG. We've certainly seen that last year. Do you think this is a role, it's going to be repeated in 2021? Because you did actually say that some US cargoes may be locked in. So are we still going to find Europe as the balancing market?
Again, the short answer is yes. At least from a demand side perspective, I think that the way of looking at it, Europe can flex around that balance. But also exporting countries such as the US and Qatar also, Europe's not the only balancer in this market. The supply side plays a balancing role as well, because they can supply big volumes to both the Atlantic and Pacific basins quite easily. So they have their own role to play. And, the Qataris have been booking lots of Northwest European regas capacity. So they can, especially with their potential new trains coming on, they can play a really bigger role in balancing the market.
Well, why don't we turn now our discussion to price? Because I specifically, a piece that you wrote on European gas prices in October last year, when you said that 2021 could be a partial repeat of 2020, and that in European gas prices could again be in the $2 to $3 per MMBTU range. Has your view changed since then? And if so, why?
Yes, well, I hope, when the evidence changes, I change my mind, as somebody again once said. I think to some extent, yes, it may be changing. And this is, again, pretty related to what is happening with the European storage. As I said, there were large withdrawals in December, and it looks like there are even larger ones in January, with storage levels at the end of January, or yesterday, basically, down to levels that they were at the end of March last year. So we're 2 months ahead of last year in terms of the storage withdrawals. So we're sort of back to what was happening in 2019 when we opened storage up, and there's quite a bit of room to inject gas, which was what happened. So it does suggest there'll be significant room in European storage to absorb LNG volumes in the summer of 2021. I mentioned earlier that our modelling was suggesting a fall in European imports of sort of 13 BCM. So that actually could be less and could be, even be maintained at similar levels to 2020, which would mean European storage again filling and absorbing these extra volumes. But, and there's always a but, this increased supply may well require lower prices than the forward curve. We've got $5 to $6 for TTF in the summer 2021. So rather than seeing a sort of $2 or below we saw in 2020, it may look more like 2019 when the Q3 prices were in the $3 to $4 range. So that's probably, at this moment in time, subject to further analysis, is where we sort of might end up.
Yeah, it's interesting because, of course, last year, back end of last year, before the cold snap hit us in Europe and, of course, Asia as well, you were kind of predicting potentially a repeat of 2020 with lower prices. But it's fascinating, that fact, isn't it, really, that withdrawals now, we're 2 months ahead of the withdrawals, and that's going to have an impact on summer prices.
Yeah, I mean, the caveat we made back in the October 1 it was that if we do get big withdrawals from storage, then that is one of the caveats to not repeating 2020. But the big withdrawals from storage have not really been because it's been that cold in Europe. It's because the LNG has been diverted to Asia, which has caused, so in fact, European storage is being used to supply the Asian market in some respects.
Absolutely, which is the global nature, of course, of LNG. Well, look, finally, on pricing theme, we've been talking about Asia. We can't have a podcast without discussing what's been happening to Asian prices over the last few months. Where we saw kind of the spot prices in Asia go over $30 for a few days in January. The very cold weather in Asia was obviously a key factor, but were there other causes that drove prices that high?
Yes, back to my favourite topic. I mean, this is probably worth a podcast on its own, so I'm setting myself for another one in a few weeks' time, David.
Always welcome, Mike. You're always welcome to come on the OIS podcast series. You know that.
Thank you very much. I'm preparing actually a more detailed comment on this, probably in the next week or two, just waiting to get some final numbers for January. But other factors, I think, included some shut-ins of LNG export capacity, obviously Gorgon, Norway, things like that being shut in. Perhaps supposedly Qatar had extra maintenance, so they seem to be able to send out the LNG all right. There's a lack of storage infrastructure in many Asian markets. In Japan, which is a fragmented market anyway, really, only has its LNG storage, which doesn't last that many days, and China's not got a huge amount of storage. We've seen constraints on shipping, with day rates skyrocketing. If you're looking to send gas from US to Asia rather than to Europe, you're effectively, because it has to travel a longer distance, especially if it gets delayed at the Panama Canal or has to go by the Suez Canal, effectively reduces export capacity. You can't use the ships intensively. And also, I believe, I think the lack of a liquid physical trading market for LNG in Asia. And in the same circumstances, I don't believe prices would have risen anywhere near as high in Europe, and they didn't rise that much anyway, because of the storage infrastructure and the very high physical trading liquidity in the Northwest European markets.
Yeah, that's interesting. Apparently, you mentioned in the paper you're writing, we're also, of course, working on a paper on the LNG shipping and maybe the longer-term implications of those. That'll be fascinating as well. But can you actually see any longer-term implications of this high price spike?
Yeah, I think there could be a couple of implications. Firstly, the use of price benchmarks such as JKM in longer-term contracts may actually be called into question. I think they were just sort of creeping into these things, and certainly medium-term ones. And the average JKM price for February delivery, which included the price spikes, was $18.31. And the last settlement price of the February contract done on January the 15th was $26.99. So in longer-term contracts, these are the typical ones that often get used, either the average of the month or the last settlement price. So if I was a buyer and had signed a contract linked to JKM or similar indices, then I'd be pretty upset to pay these prices when I'd covered my volume position. And the prices were based on very, very thin liquidity, very few cargoes to specific markets. Linking contract prices to benchmarks such as Henry Hub, TTF or NBP is fine. There's a huge amount, vast amount of physical and futures trading, and very small volumes at very high prices would have a minimal infinitesimal impact on the average price. So you don't really get the price spikes in those markets unless there's an infrastructure rupture or a big, like the Baumgarten explosion, for example. And that leads to the second implication, I think, which is the recognition, or maybe a recognition, because you said, Dave, the light bulb moment, the liquid physical trading market for gas, LNG in Asia is required. But that involves the participants and the governments accepting big changes, proper liberalisation of the gas markets, unbundling, regulated third-party access to all infrastructure, and all the other reforms which the Institute has written about over many, many years.
It's interesting because I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head there, you know. It is liquidity, isn't it? It was the lack of liquidity. But what I find interesting is, you know, there's a lot of comments now, you know, the recent conference last week was about how prices were so high, we can't accept the prices. But buyers and sellers both have very short memories, which I think is interesting about this. And then the last point, which I know you're going to address in the note you're preparing, is the impact on contracts and counterparty risk, which I think was alluded to certainly, again, in a panel I chaired last week at the conference. And I know we'll pick that one up in the paper you're going to write. But let's kind of come to the end of this podcast. And as you know, I always like to kind of look forward. So perhaps you can kind of look into your crystal ball for a minute. And can you give our listeners an insight as to how you think the market will play out in 2021?
Yeah, so my crystal ball by my desk at the moment is very foggy. So it's, but I'll do my best. I mean, the last 2 years, I think we've been on a huge rollercoaster ride for the gas markets and prices. In 2021, I think we're still on the roller coaster, but the ups and downs may be moderating. So we may be able to sort of get off the roller coaster soon. I mean, looking further ahead into 2022 and beyond, I think, as many people have been saying, the LNG market could significantly tighten. We don't have that much supply coming on, and demand is expected to increase much faster than supply. That's before we get the big wave of the LNG coming on in the mid-2020s.
Of course, and that happens if we get FIDs, which, of course, is going to be the challenge, you know, following the hiatus of the winter and also the whole kind of gas demand. Someone's got to stand still and actually commit if we're going to find those long-term offtakes and the FIDs. Isn't that the case?
Well, the surge coming in the mid-2020s is mostly projects already taken FIDs, I think. Yeah, so that's kind of locked in. I think the uncertainties, maybe it's Qatar 4 or 6 trains. They've not taken FID, but they're seeming inevitable to go ahead. And we've got the Rovuma LNG in Mozambique, Exxon E&I, which was probably going to take FID last year, but didn't. And then there may be one or two more. So the mid-2020s surge in supply is pretty much locked in, I think. But looking to the late 2020s and 2030, then yes, that's when what's happening now may impact the FIDs for that period.
Yeah, I know we're not talking today longer term picture, but you know, from the modelling that you're doing, you know, you've mentioned Gata, you've mentioned Rovuma, a couple of others, but isn't that going to be enough to satisfy the 2030 demand estimates, or are we going to need more?
Depends on what demand you're looking at, but yeah, on our numbers, yes. I mean, with adding those couple in, maybe one or two more, then you're pretty stacked up with supply to 2030. After that, obviously, you get into the whole debate about where gas demand's going in terms of, you know, climate change and decarbonisation.
Yeah, and that's a huge debate, and one I hope that we're going to cover in a future podcast. Well, look, Mike, you know, thank you so much for your time. As always, it's been a great pleasure chatting with you, and I've enjoyed our conversation and indeed the contribution to the Quarterly Gas Review that was published, as I said earlier, in January 2021 by the Institute. So to all our listeners, I hope you've enjoyed the podcast. Thank you and goodbye to everyone.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as all our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our oil, gas, electricity or China programmes, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.